congratulations on what is quite an exceptional film, and I don't think we can mention it in context without mentioning Daniel Blake.
Yes,
and the huge outpouring of support and what that meant socially to so many people. And I know that Ken Loach had said that Daniel Blake would be his last film, but I can't help feeling that that social movement that so craves his film must have somehow led to this next film. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is that, would I be correct? In...
Well, I mean, I don't know if he said it would be his last film.
Okay.
He's never presumptuous. You have to wait and see how he feels, because he is now 83 and sure. still has remarkable energy. But I think what happened was, well, lots of things lead into making a story. You know, there are lots of elements. But I suppose see it as a companion piece to Daniel Blake. Mm. It'd be both of us, both Ken and myself, say it's a Daniel piece, because when we went around the food banks for Daniel Blake, listened to people's stories, what struck us was how many of the people there were the working poor. Not people who didn't have jobs, but people who were working, who still couldn't make ends meet, couldn't pay all their bills, and still needed food for their families. And that's remarkable. Mm. And the statistics have borne this out now, because 3 out of 4 children in poverty have at least one working parent. Now, that means something radical has changed under the surface. And that's what's always interesting to us as filmmakers. What's going on under the surface? And in the old days, I mean, one person working in a family, they'd never be rich, you know, or wealthy, depending on the job. But they could, you know, they could have a dignified life and plan, and there was some sense of, you know, cohesion in their family lives. Now that's all gone. It needs 2 people to work, especially if you're in precarious work. You know, so in this story, we have Daniel, we have Ricky, who is tied to technology, who's a white van driver. You know, and what's really fascinated us too was this new language of the new contracts. You're no longer an employee, you're an owner, driver, franchisee. You don't get paid a wage, you know, it's a fee. And all this language, and it's all to convince you that you no longer are an employee, you're a warrior of the road, you're an entrepreneur. You know, you can make a fortune if you plan it and do it correct. And if you don't, it's your fault.
Mm.
You know, so William Blake, you know, the great English poet,
yes.
he talked about mind forged manacles, you know, when you get inside the head of someone, you know, and I think
yes.
that's what this system has done, this system of, you know, mass wealth and consumerism. If you haven't made a success of your life, it's because you're not clever enough, you're not smart enough, you haven't worked hard enough.
Yes.
You know, but now what we are actually beginning to see is systematic poverty, massive systematic exploitation through the new digital economy. Because they control the technology, the algorithms. We have digital Dickens.
Mm.
You know, Ricky is tied to this app, and they can call him, you know, an entrepreneur if you want.
Yes.
But they monitor every single moment, every movement of his day. And Abby, a care worker, you know, 0-hour contracts. So that means she gets work when it suits the company. Not when it suits the old people, not when it suits, you know, I mean, oftentimes, the old people now are getting chopped and changed with new carers, which really confuses them, causes them great upset. That's why I have that scene in the film.
Mm.
And I met great care workers, absolutely brilliant, who are massively dedicated to
yes.
their work. But they knew that they couldn't give enough time to the needs of these old people.
Mm.
You know, it's a £5 for a 15-minute visit. They have to pay their own travelling time. There'd be big spaces, you know, in between the day, so you have busy times in the morning to get them up, busy times at lunch for their meds, busy times in the evening for the tuck-ins, but then they were left wandering around. So there they were, having great care for these older people, but not getting back to care for their own children. And Abby's trying to organise everything by phone, the homework, the food, you know, and all the family business that people have when you have children, which is very, very demanding. And then we see all this play out in a family who really, really love each other.
Yes.
You know, this is not a family of problems.
Mm.
They shouldn't have any problems at all.
Mm.
But it's incredible just how that pressure at work feeds and bleeds into the family.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was just so struck about at how smart the kids were and how... And I think it was Gandhi who said that the greatest cruelty of poverty is the monotony, in a way, and that's what kills the brains, you know.
I don't know that quote, but it's I think there's, you know, Ricky's you know, Ricky's work is when you're, because I went out, you know, did I say this at the beginning or not? I've done so many conversations over the last 10 days.
Yeah,
but you know, it was actually easier to research I Daniel Blaine. You know, I found whistleblowers inside the
yes,
you know, the Department of Welfare. And
well, there's very specific issues, isn't there? Whereas with a story like this, it's the knock-on effect. It's like, what will happen to Seb in five years' time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, like, what will happen to these beautiful, smart children whose parents cannot deal with their heartbreak and their bedwetting and their delinquency?
Yes. Yes.
Where, you know, what paranoia and insecurity does that lead to? And it's intangible, isn't it?
No, and yet it's a very good point, you know. I mean, if there's so many kids now, if their parents were around them more, a crucial moment in their lives, I mean, it could change their lives.
Exactly.
And there's so many kids now. Look at all the knife crime there is just now. Kids going off the rails, scared, frightened.
Yes.
You know, where are their parents?
Yeah.
You know, the community centre's been closed down, the library's been closed down, the swimming pool's been closed down, the football fields have been sold off, all part of austerity. So it's all coming together in a perfect storm. Now, it all makes sense to the market, because people are making a lot of money out of that, but it's not making sense to the family. It's not making sense to the community. It might suit Amazon to say, the consumer is king, but people are more than consumers. Their parents, they're workers, they live in a community, it's Kilmer City Centre, all that pollution. I mean, what a silly model, this crazy model now against climate change. One exploited driver delivering socks and shoes and vapes and curries or whatever the damn thing is. What a crazy model. Suits Jeff Bezos, who's now the richest man in the world. And it suits Amazon, this huge big monolith now that's stretching into, you know, iCloud to drive into, produce into food to whatever. Suits them. But it doesn't suit the community.
So how, you know, when you were saying that you were researching Daniel Blake, how did the formation, the germs of this story start for you? Was it like, with a family, with the people, or was it with the jobs, like the carer job and the...
Oh, it's all multi-layered. I think when you're doing it at the beginning, you kind of... there's all sorts of things that bleed in. I mean, reading those contracts, that was a real key moment for me. You know, when I read those contracts... It's onboarding. You're no longer an employee.
And, like, and the clients, like referring to patients as clients.
Yes, it's all that language. Because I think language sometimes is, you know, it's language is not neutral.
No.
Efficiency, modernity. Jeff Bezos, one of his leadership principles, is speed matters. You know, speed matters. It does matter, but in different ways.
Yeah.
It matters to him because he can get more money out of it. But, you know, if an Amazon worker in a fulfillment centre, this again is Orwellian language, you know, he's got to move or she's got to move something every 8 seconds or they get penalised.
Yeah.
You know, it matters to them because they get repetitive, you know, repetitive strain syndrome and they get bad backs and they get bad knees and they do all the stuff. What does it do? I mean, I went out with what was very key was just going out to the depots because it was very hard to find the drivers, you know, because...
They're all busy.
they're knackered, they're scared, they're frightened, and they're also just, you know, just not there and they're moving around. So I just went out to the depots and I went and spoke to them and I listened to them and I persuaded some of them to let me come and help them deliver the parcels. And then when you see what they look like after 10 hours driving and you see them running and you see them taking the high-energy drinks, then you realise they're not getting proper days off. Then you see the photographs of their children on the dashboards, you know, and then you see that they're you know, just the endless stress and frustration. And you think, like, well, Gandhi's thing, the sheer, you know, monotony of it.
Yes.
Now, I don't know what it would do, just sitting like that for so long.
Yes.
You know, and that level of stress,
exactly.
And that level of being controlled all the time. Every time you come out and the bleep goes, if you're out there for 2 minutes, and you can't find the address or you get abuse from stuff. What it does to people's mental health. And then when you go back home and you're supposed to deal with a stroppy teenager, what energy have you got left? You know, what resilience have you got left? You know, so again, it suits the companies, but it doesn't suit life. It doesn't suit human beings. And so it begs the question, you know, like when Abby says at the end of the film, you know, how do they get away with it?
Yes.
You know, and that's the big question. And I hope the zeitgeist is changing. I think people are beginning to realise now, especially with the climate, you know, we have got to sort this out by working together and finding solutions. You know, people, you know, pushed to the very, very limit like that. you know.
And I don't think, when those companies, they say, oh, it's consumer-led, I don't believe that it is. I don't remember asking for deliveries on a Sunday or, you know.
It's a very good question.
Yeah.
It's this assumption that you must beat the opposition, you must do this.
And, yes.
And they also forget that, you know, I mean, Maloney's a tough guy there. He says, does anybody ever actually care, you know, about you?
Mm.
You know, and I think a lot of people don't because they haven't got that habit of civic curiosity that we need. But I don't want, you know, shirts done, you know, made by slavery and children and exploited children. Yeah. I don't want Ricky working 14 hours a day and risking other children on the street because he's so tired, you know?
Mm.
Just to get Jeff Bezos to get another 100 million.
Yeah.
You know, no way, and I think we have to have civic curiosity, but we've also got to find you. You can't tame that beast.
No.
They've got the corporations and, you know, and the politicians in their pockets, huge donations, etc. They've got power, they've been, I mean, Jeff Bezos bought a newspaper.
Yeah.
You know, he's got his own streamlining service. Who commissions his programmes and his, you know, what content have they have? You know, again, corporate power, but I think, you know, especially the younger generation now, we have to look at new models of ownership.
Yes.
In new ways, so you can control what we do.
Yes.
And I think, you know, maybe bit by bit, consciousness is changing. If we're going to solve these big, huge problems, climate change, how we live, energy, we're going to have to come together, you know, and this exploitative, viciously exploitative model, which has led to mass inequality, will not work. You know?
And it must bring you some comfort to know that that's what your films do.
Yeah.
They do have community screenings. People do.
Well, do it was. Thanks for saying that because it was very touching. E1 were great.
Mm.
You know, with Daniel Blake, they had like 600 community screenings because so people could see it together.
Yes.
You know, and like, you know, so people could see it cheaply, but also people who couldn't go. I mean, if you're on the dole in one of these jobs, it's hard to pay, you know, 10, 11, 12 quid, you know? It's hard to do that, especially when you bring and go with a partner and you want to bring children. So to have those community screenings, and then the debate afterwards was fantastic.
Yes.
I've just come back from France. On last Wednesday, we showed a screening on the Champs-Élysées to two screenings simultaneously, about 1,100 activists. And people are fighting back, you know. There was couriers, there was care workers, there was chambermaids. You know, many of them strike and say, no, we will not have this.
Yes.
And what was interesting is that although we're telling the story in the northeast of England, it's happening in Rome, where we were. It was happening in Italy. It was happening in Spain.
In China.
There's hundreds of thousands of drivers, you know, in the United States. Amazon is the second biggest employer after Walmart. You know, and we're saying, right, no.
Yeah.
But we've really got to get together, you know, and join up, you know, and change the consciousness.
So tell me, you've worked with Ken Loach for 25 years.
Is it? Oh, my God.
Well, nearly 25 years. 23, I think it is.
Is it? Oh,
1995, I believe, is your first film.
Oh, but then we're working, you know, for a long time before that.
Oh, right, OK. So tell me, what's the secret of your successful relationship, do you think?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that, really. I suppose we just still enjoy each other's company, I suppose. We do different jobs.
Yes.
That's very important. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
He's a director. But we meet in the middle as filmmakers. Our loyalty to the project. You know, there's no big egos. Great fun. I mean, you couldn't imagine a more demanding collaborator. Maybe you couldn't imagine a more generous one as well.
Yes.
And it's a lot of fun.
How are you changed by writing something like this?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that. But every project... you feel massively nourished, you know, by the people you meet, and I mean every project to me is always like a mountain to climb. It's always very demanding, and you want to make sure that you don't sell it short just because you've made films before. But also in the process, because you never know how film will be, but you meet remarkable people, and if you dig in under the surface, you always make connection, and you see people, and you see people's resilience. You see people's determination, you see people's humour, but you also see how fragile we are. And the more I begin to look at it now, you begin to just see how it is carved up more and more into corporations' favour, and how that's supported by the press, the narrative, you know, every single institution, you know, and that's why it's so hard to change. You know, and I think we've really done such a disservice to our young people, you know. Especially, you know, when I was studying, I got a grant, you know, didn't have to pay for university, You know, now look at them. You know, they're riddled with debt before they even start. Their chances of getting a deposit is simply impossible. You know, the idea of building a family, unless you get, you know, access to wealth from a different generation. You know, I think what we see now is an inequality which is almost unimaginable.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that permeates. And I mean, even the Financial Times and the New York Times, I bought the paper last week, they're worried about this gross inequality that's feeding into extremism and populism. Mm, you know,
exactly.
And the great danger, I think, is that these populists smell fear, smell danger, and find good scapegoats. And I think the great imaginative challenge for us now is to see where power lies, democratise the economy so we can give people a real life, so people don't have to destroy their families like that. Because
yeah.
that is the life of millions.
Yes.
Literally millions.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry we're going to have to bring this to a close, but it's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you.
Thank you
so much for your time.